Golf Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. And by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf. Nathan Groob, the tournament director, Travelers Championship, joins me now to preview this exciting PGA Tour event in Connecticut, June 23rd to the 26th. Hey, Nathan, welcome to Talking Golf.
And thank you so much for having me on. Whenever I talk to you, I know spring is here, summer's right around the corner, so I'm so excited to talk to you right now.
I know. Hopefully the sun will come out soon, right? And we'll get some warmth. But hey, that was a fun media day last Tuesday.
You know what? It's what, one of the first ones we've had in like 3 years. Actually, we were all together, and it was very cool. I mean, Harris English, our champion, giving us the time. You know, all the media coming out, giving us the time, playing the golf course. It was just, it was fun to see everybody and, you know, talk stories and get excited for the upcoming Travelers Championship.
And some news that day, of course, if there is another playoff, and last year, as you mentioned, it ended with Harris English winning after a record 8 sudden death playoff holes. We know that Andy Bassett and Travelers CEO Alan Schnitzer will not be wearing wool jackets, right?
I tell you what, listen, that the wool jacket with the red umbrella was a really good idea on paper for like a closing ceremony shot. Not so good for an 80-degree walk for 2 hours. So, you know, some things on paper look really good, but then they've decided they're taking the wool coats off next year if we have a playoff, which I think we have a playoff like every other year is what it comes down to. But they're going to be wearing golf shirts this time.
What are your memories of that 8-hole playoff from last year?
I mean, as a tournament director, you think about the weather first, right? Like, okay, is everything going to be good? And the weather was perfect that afternoon. And then to have the crowd so excited, they were running back and forth from 18 to 17 and, you know, doing the wave on 18 and chanting Harris and Kramer's name. Like, it was just, there was so much energy and excitement. But honestly, Ann, about the 7th hole, I started to get nervous going, okay, if we run out of daylight, what's our contingency plan? You know, like, you have to have that plan for a Monday finish. So I started talking to our ops team going, all right, you know, let's make sure the committees are set up and security and police and concessions and gate, you know, just kind of going through all those logistics. So I kind of lost the excitement for about 35 to 40 minutes because I really thought there is no way we're going to run out of daylight. You know, it's one of the longest days of the year. I swear we had like 21 hours of daylight that day. But, I mean, it looked like we were about to run out. So I was excited, and then I went into logistics mode, and then I was just really excited when Harrison got to win.
Well, it finally ended at, what, 8:09, right? What time was sundown?
Oh, gosh. It was. We had probably another 15 minutes at the most.
Oh, wow.
I was talking to Gary, the rules official with the PGA Tour, and they're walking up the fairway, and I'm walking behind on the radio, and they're walking up, and he said, Nathan, on the 8th hole, the hole that actually ended it, he goes, we maybe have one more hole, but then we're going to Monday. So I knew, I'm like, man, we have 20 minutes, maybe. So, yeah, it came down to the wire.
Literally, it really did. Well, why do you think we get such dramatic finishes at the Travelers Championship? I mean, guys in the lead falling apart, others coming back from, you know, dramatic deficits to win. Why do you think that's the case there?
I honestly think it has to do with the layout of the course. Layout of the course and the crowds, right? I mean, if you've played the golf course, you've seen it when the crowds are there. When you come through 14, right, you kind of finish that par 4 on 14, and you just kind of take this right, and you don't realize it, but you kind of come into this arena of 4 finishing holes that are all right in front of you. The crowds are there. They get loud, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, man, this is real. I remember Stuart Sink said it about it. He said, it's probably 4 of the best finishing holes that we play on tour because everything is right in front of you. And it's so loud. And you, I mean, it's a drivable par 4, a hard par 3, a hard par 4, a loud par 4. So I think guys just kind of start to feel it. And not only that, but you can make a big move one way or the other. I mean, I remember Bubba could have probably won this tournament. He won it 3 times, but he could have won it at least 2 more. And then just had, I mean, some really tough holes on 16 and 17. And I just think it's the atmosphere mixed with the actual layout of the golf course. It's just, it's good theater. And guys can go one way or the other there.
I mean, it's great theater. I know last year, Bubba, as you mentioned, three-time winner of the Travelers. He was in the lead, but then he finished with four bogeys and a double.
It was unreal. So, I mean, I go back to that, right? When they teed off, it was Bubba and Kramer Hickok in that last group that teed off. And everybody was rooting for Bubba, right? I mean, it was going to be potentially his fourth win. He was going to tie Billy Casper. And, I mean, they were chanting Bubba, Bubba on the first tee. And then just what happened with the run that Kramer made in that group, I mean, the crowd, and even Bubba did. He kind of realized what was happening on, like, 17, I would say. So walking up 18, he knew he was out of it. He knew Kramer had a chance for the playoff. And he was right there for Kramer. It was really cool to see Bubba kind of, you know, in the middle of his, you know, really tough stretch of holes, he kind of stepped aside in a sense, like, hey, Kramer, you know, you have a chance to get into the playoff here. So that was pretty cool to see. And then all of a sudden at the end of that round, they're chanting Kramer, Kramer, Kramer when he gets into the playoff. So to see that flip from, you know, when they teed off on one, where the gallery was, you know, chanting for Bubba and then they were chanting for Kramer. So it was very cool to see.
And then Ches Reavy, I remember in 2019, he did have a six-shot lead, but then that dissipated to a one-shot lead at one point. He ended up beating Keegan Bradley by a pretty comfortable margin. But, you know, Reavy, a six-shot lead, and then it gets down to one.
So that was another one. You're absolutely right. I mean, you go back, we could probably go back each year, but Ches on the back nine, you know, he's like, okay, he's looking comfortable. His stats all week were crazy good. And then Keegan makes that run, right? And Keegan's a New England guy. And all of a sudden, the momentum that Keegan had, and then it was on seven. I think on the 17th tee, to your point, Ches only had a one-shot lead on 17, and Keegan, I think, had just birdied 15. And then the tee shot, Keegan puts in the bunker, and then he makes a double there. I mean, it was just like it flipped, to your point. Ches ended up winning, I think, by three, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But standing on that 17th tee, you're sitting there going, man, no lead is safe. You just
That's
never
right.
know what's going to happen on this back nine. So that was pretty fun, too.
And then, of course, you can't forget Jordan Spieth holing out from that greenside bunker on the 18th to win in a playoff against Daniel Berger. That happened in 2017. So there's always great theater on those last holes.
It's one of those things where you look at a golf course and it can play into the narrative of your tournament so well, right? There's some courses that kind of have this history as you go into it. You know, it's been here for 100 years and it's hosted Ryder Cups and things like that. There's some courses that kind of bring a history with them. And then there are some courses that just bring the anticipation of drama. Like, and that's what I think we have. Our fans, it's so funny. They go, okay, what's going to happen this year? You know, there's just this anticipation because of the golf course. And I remember in 2016, you brought up the Jordan shot. But in 16, I remember when Furyk shoots 58, you know, and sets the PGA Tour record and people are going crazy. I remember somebody coming up to me after that. And they went, man, you are in trouble next year. There's no way you're going to be able to follow this, you know. And it was somebody from the media, and I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, this is going to be tough to do that. And then Jordan chips in the next year, and that person was like, well, okay, I guess you did. You know, so you just never know, but our fans just come to expect it. It's kind of fun.
Well, as you said, Harris English was connected via Zoom at the media day, and he had hip surgery early this year, which, gosh, after such a great season last year, that was too bad. I know he was eligible for the Masters for the first time, but he had to miss the Masters. So what's mm-hmm. his status for coming up this season?
You know, talking to Harris and his agent, they both are saying that he feels good. I mean, Harris is really looking forward to you know, he circled, obviously, our event to be able to come back and play. But what's crazy, Ian, is that you heard him say this in media day, that he's been dealing with this injury for like 10-plus years. And he kind of knew that it was coming, and he was kind of making modifications and tweaks in his swing to kind of accommodate for the tear. And then he finally just said, look, it was too much. And to think that a guy knew that he had a tear in his hip, and he still won multiple times that year, played on a Ryder Cup, you know, things like that. It's like, wow, what's he going to do now that this is fixed, if it really has been kind of a lingering injury? So, but yeah, no, he's scheduled to come back, and he wants to be, you know, more than 100% by the time he gets to Travelers.
That'd be awesome. Awesome. Well, let's talk about the stars who are coming along with Harris English. Hopefully he'll be fully recuperated. Rory McIlroy seems to commit very early to play.
So it's funny, these guys, you know this, right? And so your listeners, I'm sure, do as well, but all of these players are independent contractors, right? They don't have to play anywhere. And so, you know, part of our job, you know, with Andy Bassett and myself, you know, we go out and recruit players. So to get the guys to commit early is something that obviously the fans love, that we love. And Rory has been awesome. I mean, since the first time he played here in, I want to say maybe it was 16 or 17 was his first year here. And he said something, he said, you know what? It's like a Ryder Cup that people are actually here at 6:50 in the morning lining the first tee to do it. I'm like, yeah, our fans are great. So he has said, I mean, once he came here, he has said, I absolutely love coming here for all the reasons, and we love having him. But, yeah, once he knows, he's one of those guys that once he knows where he's playing, he will say, yeah, I'm coming, and he'll commit early. Other guys wait till the last minute. Just kind of that's their mentality. But Rory has always been really, really good where he knows, I want to say almost a year and a half in advance, like kind of what his schedule is sometimes. And if he knows he's coming, he lets you say, hey, absolutely, talk about me in market. So he's been,
that's,
he's
so
been
helpful. And yet, yeah, Brooks Koepka, Patrick Cantlay, Dustin Johnson, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, JT, Bubba, Will Zalatoris. I mean, really incredible field.
You know what? I get nervous for the U.S. Open. You know, they have to play before us, and they're nervous about how they're going to get their field in. Obviously, I'm kidding. But, you know, I mean, yeah, with the Open so close, the guys, I think, know their schedule earlier where they're just going to be able to drive down. It's a quick, you know, you did it last week, right? I mean, it's a quick drive. And so, yeah, it's great. I mean, just building relationships with those guys. And it's interesting when you look back, like at the top 10 in the world right now. I mean, you look back like, okay, so many of those guys we have built relationships with and given exemptions to, you know, when they started their career, you look at it, it's like Rahm and Morikawa and Hovland and Cantlay and Justin Thomas. And like all those guys were amateurs or turned pro with us, you know? So kind of that exemption relationship, that story, over the years, getting to know them when they're younger. And then obviously they become, you know, what they've become. It's, you know, they remember and they come back and our fans remember and they appreciate it. So it's kind of that long-term strategy approach that's paying off with the field.
And one of my favorite aspects of the Travelers is that 100% of net proceeds each year donated to nonprofit organizations in the area. And I know last year the Travelers Championship raised $2.2 million for what, 125 charities in the region, which is unbelievable. And since the tournament's inception in 1952, $45.5 million donated.
And it's one of the things I never get tired of talking about. And I think it's the coolest part of the PGA Tour. I mean, the fact that we can say that, like that we, you know, you heard me say it last week, we don't have an owner, right? Like the Travelers Championship doesn't have an owner that sees this as a, you know, a profit line of their portfolio, of their business. Like this tournament exists to be able to raise money for charity. And those numbers kind of roll off the tongue, like, oh, we raised $2.2 million. But, like, there are so many stories that I wish I could sit down with your listeners and be like, all right, now let's talk about the actual people impacted by each of these numbers, where you can run a professional sporting event and do something that, you know, impacts the community, and then you get the best players in the world playing here. But then also, like, these are real people. I mean, you heard the young man speak, Sayer, from Omaha Gang Camp. I mean, these are real people that are impacted significantly by these numbers, and it's happening in every community. Every community where there's a PGA Tour event, this happens. So you're right, it's a super unique aspect of the PGA Tour, and I never get tired of talking about it.
And I love the passion of you and your team for this Travelers Championship, and in particular for all the charity dollars that you raise. I can't thank you enough, Nathan, for getting up early and coming on, and see you at the Travelers Championship, June 23rd to the 26th.
Awesome, Ann. Thank you for all the support. We'll see you soon.
Golf Interview with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. And by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf.